continuing on with the theme from last week's episode, we're going to learn more about a trailblazer in the offshore industry. She's an experienced subsea engineer, and she's made it to the senior vice president level at Technip FMC. This is the Women Offshore Podcast. I'm your host, Ali Cedeno, a mariner and founder of Women Offshore. Women Offshore is a 501c3 nonprofit organization supporting a diverse workforce on the water. If you have worked on a ship, a platform, you name it, if you have worked on the water for any sort of period of time, you know how isolating it can be. That physical isolation, being away from family and friends, it can take its toll. Not having good internet or phone connectivity can be a struggle, especially if you have something going on at home that you are worried about. As a woman, you can also face social isolation. That is very common for women, where we go out there and we're not accepted, or everyone holds us at a distance and you can feel like your presence is just being tolerated. That social isolation can show up when you go to the galley, you grab your food, you go to sit in the mess, and people come over and they don't want to sit with you. They sit at the other end of the table. They sit away from you. It can feel so isolating, and it can be a struggle, a reminder that you are a woman, that you don't belong. The women in our community, I know, are so resilient. They have ways to manage this. They sometimes don't find it that big of a deal, but some do. And that social isolation can add up, these little cuts that tell you that you don't quite belong, that maybe this industry isn't for you. Well, if you're thinking that way, this industry is for you. You have so many opportunities to thrive. Maybe not where you are right now, but there are opportunities out there. And I encourage you to keep looking. Don't give up on a career on the water. I know throughout my own career, I questioned, do I belong in this industry? As a woman, as someone who wants to make it far, are there role models out there? And it can be hard to find them. Thanks to LinkedIn, I know a lot more women making it to the top, or they're at the top of companies. I was recently introduced to Christina Johansson. She is a senior vice president of product management at Technip FMC, where she's responsible for subsea products and service lines and marketing strategies globally. She is a leader in the industry and has climbed the corporate ladder since starting as a project engineer back in 1997. For not only her career path, but also the way she leads. As you listen to her today, you're going to hear about how she leads with an awareness and supports those around her. She's here to share her passion, her challenges, and her wisdom of being a woman, especially when you are the only woman on board or in the boardroom. I'm really excited to learn from her and everything that she has to share. So welcome, Christina. Welcome to the Women Offshore Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Yes, I'm so excited for you to be here too. I used to work for your company for a short stint, so it is just an honor to be interviewing you and to learn from you. Really want to capture your wisdom here with all of the experience that you have in the industry. So please start out by sharing your background and how did you get started in the industry?
It's kind of a long story and bizarre in a way because I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, so like very far away from the ocean. And I was raised by my mom and my grandparents. Like my mom had me when she was 17. So we had some challenges when I was growing up, but they always were so dedicated to like getting me what I needed. And school was already always priority number one by my family. I knew that in order to go to college, like I needed a scholarship. So I had to do really well. And I worked really hard to achieve that. And I ended up going to Houston when I was 17 to study engineering at Rice University.
Yeah, go Rice. I went to Rice.
Did you? Oh, cool.
Yeah, I got my MBA there.
No way. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, there's not that many owls out there. So
yeah, go owls.
But it, you know, if you go to Rice, like it's kind of a tough place. It's everybody is really well prepared academically. So I think my sophomore year, I was actually even having second thoughts about whether or not engineering was really going to be my thing. But I stumbled across and I ended up getting a summer job for Amoco in West Texas. So I kind of had to try it out and I absolutely loved it. I loved the hands-on engineering, managing like systems, working with the people, learning how to assemble things. They were so generous in what they wanted to show me about how the oil field worked, learning to diagnose problems and design solutions. It was really, really rewarding and I'm so grateful to them. And so when I went back to school after that summer, it was like, okay, we're doing this, you know? So
yeah, good.
So then I understood then that engineering was so much more than like math problems or, you know, long equations. So engineering is a much broader subject and really cool. So I had multiple offers out of school. If you go to school in Houston, like you either end up at NASA or in oil and gas, or at least that's how it used to be. I was offered a position at a company that was just bought by FMC called Kongsberg Offshore. And it was like, okay, well, Kongsberg, I found out that was in Norway and that sounded kind of cool. It would be neat to travel to Norway someday, I was thinking. and then the other part of it was that it had something to do with offshore and something called subsea. And my childhood dream was like to become a marine biologist. So this was like my little way of like, okay, well, I'll get some exposure to these things. So I started in that part of the company. And I was just super lucky because the group, the company hit a massive growth phase. This is at the end of the 90s. And the team I was working in quadrupled in the 4 years I was there. And it was the best like out of school experience you could have because it was, yeah, it was design and calculations, but it was also supplier visits and night shifts in the workshop. And then finally, taking the equipment that we had been designing for 2 years and then installing it in different parts of the Gulf of Mexico. So I got to go offshore for 2 years, kind of off and on, to install the equipment that I'd been part of developing. And that was just so rewarding. I mean, there's nothing better than getting yelled at by an ROV operator at 4 a.m. because they don't like your interface, right? So,
yeah. Oh, I bet you have such great memories of working offshore. And yeah, you're one of the pioneers in our industry. So, as a woman working offshore, and it's such a pleasure to get to know you. And I have to thank you because as a woman coming behind you, you know, you paved the way. So I think a lot of women listening to this want to say thank you for what you've done for us, probably without realizing it. You going out there showing that women can do it and showing up every day means a lot.
Oh, thank you. It was honestly just really rewarding and fun. I loved that, you know, when you're a team offshore doing an operation, you're fully dedicated to the job, 24 hours a day. You're all in it together. There's tons of money on the line. You've got to find solutions to make things work. So it's such a rewarding experience, and it has really meant a lot to me in all roles that I've had later on, that I think back on those experiences. And it's definitely was one of my favorite parts of my career, even though it was 20 years ago since I got to go offshore, but it's still really important to me.
Yeah. Yeah. All those hard experiences I'm sure paid off. And yeah, you've had an amazing career since going offshore, and even your time offshore was really just so impressive. So looking at what you've done, looking at what you do currently in your job, What are you most passionate about in your career? Are there any projects that you are working on currently that you are excited about?
I had a career that progressed into many different roles, and it's been, I feel like I've grown up in the subsea industry and have had so many interesting roles. And now my role is about creating the future of the business. It's the strategy, it's the which products and services should we be investing in, and how do we shape the future of Technip FMC? And that's a super exciting challenge. So I'm super happy with that. Probably the other things that really I'm passionate about is, you know, what is the future for our industry? You know, the energy transition is well underway. And oil and gas, you know, it's always been unstable, but now the volatility is like hitting harder and faster, and it's tough on our industry, but there's also a lot of really great opportunity here. So I am excited about how will our industry change to begin to embrace more carbon-free energies? What technologies are needed, and how do we apply those technologies into the energy transition to help the world? You know, it's shocking to see the changes that are happening. You know, look at the Northwest US hitting 110 degrees last week.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And Houston crippled by snowstorms.
Oh, I know.
So like all of these things drive the need for more of a variety of sources and more carbon-free sources. And I think that's super exciting and motivating to think about how can we be part of solving those problems for the world. So that's something I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, I bet that's so admirable. And to be at the forefront is a huge responsibility to think about how are we going to save this planet. So yeah. That is very exciting. And like you said, very worrisome. I'm from Seattle, so seeing family suffer in that heat, that was a challenge because there's no, like most homes in the Northwest don't have AC units, which is a foreign concept down here in Houston. But definitely a lot needs to be done there. So it'll be very exciting to see what Technip FMC comes up with as we transition to greener energy.
Yeah. So that's probably one of the most, I think, exciting things I'm a part of now. Probably the other topic that I'm really passionate about is women in leadership. And I must admit, like in the early days, like I used to get a kick out of being the only woman in the room.
Yeah, explain that. What does that mean?
You know the feeling, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe there's some sort of like a feeling of like, yeah, you know, I defied the odds and breaking into a space or room where others aren't there. But, you know, after 24 years of breaking into lots of rooms where I'm the only one, like I really want to see this go faster.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm a dedicated mentor, sponsor, and I'm happy to engage and contribute wherever I can in this space. And like I do talks and lunches and mentoring and, you know, trying to find talent and pull them forward and would do whatever I can to share my story as like a woman, a mother, and a wife in a demanding career in the energy industry. And hopefully some of that becomes valuable to other women.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. You're such a role model, and there's so many challenges to being a woman in the workplace. A common one between working offshore and shoreside is being the only woman. And I know that many women listening to this show are the onlys in the place of their work. So being the only can have several challenges where women feel they need to work harder, they experience added pressure. You talked about being, you know, the only one, but could you go into some challenges that you faced, especially in your career when you were the only, and how did you manage or overcome these challenges?
I have very often been the only in a room. I'm currently the only in the leadership team I participate in today. So, I mean, I think it is really easy to feel left out and to feel pressure to conform to maybe some norms that might not feel quite like you. And, you know, to be uncertain about how your ideas will be received. So it is really, I definitely feel for that challenge. There's even some things, you know, that I've adjusted or changed about the way I interact. And that's so, and it's okay for me to make these changes. And it's just techniques that I've developed to try and help my ideas to have an impact in an environment that is maybe all male. So for example, like I've changed the way I speak. I actually
Oh, really?
Speak, yeah. It's happened kind of gradually, but I have found it really effective. So speaking slower, using a deeper voice, and especially under times of stress or conflict, it really makes an impact. People are more apt to be listening to your ideas if you present them in a way that is calm and doesn't remind them of some other woman yelling at them or something. I don't know why this is the way it is, but it really does help. And I think, you know, so making adjustments like that, I think have just improved perhaps my ability to get ideas across, which I think is an important part of the role. But in other ways, you know, I think I've just become more and more myself as I've gotten older. You know, my style, you know, I prefer to wear dresses. I approach problems very creatively, and I am not afraid to show the empathy that I'm feeling for people rather than hiding it, for example. So, you know, there's a lot of great leadership practice in just being yourself and daring to share it. So yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems that you have found effective ways to communicate. And at the same time, you're not changing your whole self. You're still bringing yourself to the table as much as you can. But you've realized that there are certain things you need to do to be heard, especially when you're the only in the room.
Yes, yes. That's one thing. And then the other thing I try to keep in mind is that, you know, while being the only like female in the room is very physically obvious, there are always others in the room that are the only of something that it just might not be as visible, right?
So
you could easily have other kind of allies in the room. You might not even know it, but like, you know, there can be people that are sitting on secrets that they don't feel brave enough or don't feel like their secrets would be accepted. Like maybe they're struggling with mental health issues or going through a divorce or, you know, or maybe they're gay and don't want to admit it, you know, to their colleagues. So there can definitely be other onlys in the room. And I think we shouldn't, that's why I love that, you know, kind of we've expanded our discussion about diversity to be a discussion of inclusion and diversity, mm-hmm. because including people that feel different or have maybe other non-obvious or you can't maybe see on them how they're different, it makes it a much wider theme, which is something that everybody can participate in, because I think probably everybody at some point in their life has felt excluded. So if you can kind of relate to that in the people around you, it helps you feel like you're not maybe the only.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that perspective and realizing where other people come from. And they're not just men. They're individuals, right? They're individuals that have their own things going on, and most likely there's some pain there's some hardship. Being able to see through that, we can come together to be more inclusive. So yeah, that's great. Yeah. So there's something I wanted to bring up, and I think that you've touched on this in several points already through your leadership style, but McKinsey's study Women in the Workplace revealed that, you know, company profits and share performance can be close to 50% higher when women are well represented. But there was something else in this study that I found really interesting, and I think you've touched on it because of who you are, and that's the impact of women on a company's culture, embracing employee-friendly policies and programs, and championing racial and gender diversity. In your experience, what does it take to get more women into senior level positions so that we have this impact on companies? And what advice do you have for women who are looking to make it to the same level as you? Is there a secret to making it to the top? Is there a secret sauce?
Having, of course, a company policy and having a plan for inclusion and diversity and having clear goals about that, that's, of course, number one. So, I mean, I expect that of all modern companies, really, that's part of their good company practices, that they have those kinds of plans. But of course, we actually, you have to see the evidence, right? So you should look at the executive teams and see, are they able to are they reaching their goals? It's pretty obvious in some respects. So we want to see those practices. And when new positions are opened up, we want to make sure that we have processes in place to find the best candidate, and we need to be able to talk about things like unconscious bias, because I think all of us, men and women, we have unconscious biases, and we need to check those and make sure that we're making the right choices. So companies have to have a really active relationship to being leaders that are door openers, that are mentors, that are supporting underrepresented populations. So I think that's one sort of fundamental. And what we should do, to make steps as individuals, I think we shouldn't be afraid to reach out to other women, colleagues or people higher up in your company. At least I've had fantastic, and I have fantastic women mentors and colleagues that, we cheer each other on. We kind of offer advice in a different way than maybe a male mentor would, I had one that, she always had a granola bar ready because she'd sense when I would have low blood sugar and was like needing a little bit of extra support. So, and then as for like secrets to get to the top, there's like the obvious ones that aren't maybe so secret. It's hard work. It's discipline and dedication. It's about creating results, doing the best you can in every role that you have, sharing your results, and just keep building. Maybe to debunk a couple of myths, I didn't really have, or I haven't had a career path that has been perfectly linear in an upward trending direction. I think I created an analogy in my head that, so we have these areas where you go hiking in Norway, it's these marshes. The forest here is quite, it's wetlands. So you've got like these planks along the trails and stones. So you often have to like walk along and jump from one to the next. And I think of this in a career perspective, like you should have one foot pretty solid on a plank or a stone before you take that next step. And then you find your next step. And okay, when that foot's solid, okay, maybe you move the next step. And it shouldn't be aimless, right? But you should be seeking new experiences, seek good leaders and good mentors. And, it's good to, land on something solid before you move, because, and not be afraid to test new ground either. We've seen in studies that, a woman will look at a job announcement and look through all the criteria. And if she doesn't have at least 90% of the criteria on the job posting, she won't apply, right? She'll be like, no, I didn't meet their criteria. I'm not going to do it. Whereas men will look at that job announcement and, if they've got 20, 30%, they're good. They call it good. They throw their name in the hat and they kind of go for it. And that's something that I think we really have to have a conscious relationship to, because women have to also lean in and dare to make those next steps. I think that's that's us, but of course there's other factors that contribute.
Yeah, that confidence gap is so real and something that we have to keep in mind as women, that, you know, we have to make these big jumps and put ourselves out there. And even though it's much easier to be in a safe place and you know, you can think that you're not ready, but having a mentor, someone like you, to encourage us to, yeah, go for it. You know, you can apply for that job. You might just get it.
Yeah, yeah. And even if you don't, you might learn something in the process.
Yes.
About like, oh, okay, well, if you want to take this next step, we would recommend you to take this other role first. You know, like if you just show that you're putting yourself out there, that also shows ambition and it gives the leadership an idea that, okay, she's curious. She wants new roles and she's showing it. And that's normally it's a really good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to pick your brain about something you said earlier about with companies sending D&I policies. And I see companies do that. I talk to executives sometimes who tell me, oh, yeah, we have a policy for that. Or, you know, we try to ensure that's part of our culture. But then seeing it from a woman's perspective or talking to women at their company, it, just because they have a policy in place doesn't mean that's actually what the culture is. And cultures can vary within a company too. You can have these microcultures on board vessels that are determined by the captain or the OIM, whoever's in charge. So what are your thoughts on checking like the pulse of a culture? And I would love for you to touch on just checking that pulse from an executive point of view.
You know, we want to put in place, and we do have in place, you know, goals and metrics for how to promote inclusion and diversity. And I think those are really important because it really puts it on the agenda and it makes it such that, you know, managers and executives have to think about it. I also think, you know, like we've implemented like some mandatory training about unconscious bias. I think that's fantastic. I'm really excited that that's become part of our coursework and that all managers have to do it. I think as a woman considering a new, let's say, micro environment or like a vessel or a new space, it's, you know, it's a good idea to pay attention to what is the leadership in that group? What are they saying? You know, and how are they talking? What kind of language do they use? Maybe interview other women or even and men on board a ship of, you know, what's it like here? And, you know, I think it's okay to ask those questions if you're considering a new switch, because environment matters, leadership matters. And I think we shouldn't be afraid to say that. And we should make choices that, you know, might mean that we might avoid certain environments and we might prefer to go to other environments instead.
That's a good point. That's a really good point that, you know, as a woman in this industry, you don't have to necessarily be at part of the frontier that you don't want to be in. Like we don't need to soldier forward representing our gender in an environment where we're miserable. Like there are other companies that will have maybe a better culture, most likely, than where you're at if you are unhappy.
Yes. Yeah. And I had a really interesting conversation with some of the women engineers that travel offshore in our company just a couple weeks ago to kind of prep for this podcast and to hear, you know, how is it today? I mean, it's 20 years since I've been offshore. So how is it now? And, you know, what do you experience and what do you feel? And I got lots of really interesting feedback. And I'd say one that shared with me in, let's say, an uncomfortable experience that she'd had offshore and, you know, a confrontation, quite, I think, energetic, loud confrontation with somebody who didn't want to do what she was asking him to do. And her experience was that, you know, she actually stopped the conversation and says, "We're going to have this conversation later when you're not so emotional." And when, like, she, you know, and because she said the guy was like right in her face, right? And she's like, she stopped the situation and walked away. And I was like, dang,
yeah,
that's awesome. That is so, that is so brave, you know, that is really good. And she said then at, you know, later that a couple hours later, they sat down, the two of them, and had a conversation about, you know, what was meant to happen on the deck at that moment and why, and, you know, why the procedure was the way it was, and they worked it out together. And the other good practice, she said, was that the supervisor for the vessel had seen the confrontation from afar and had come to see her afterwards and to check, are you okay? Did this go, you know, was it, you know, do you need my support? And in this case, she was like, no, I'm good, thanks. You know, we've taken care of it. And I was like, oh, this is so good. This was like so many good practices all at once, you know?
Yeah.
Like, dare to stop a bad situation. Don't escalate it if you can. I know it's not always easy. Uh-huh. And, you know, have the conversation, you know, in a calm, objective discussion with the other person. You know, everybody wants to be heard. Everybody wants to be treated with respect. So, you know, sitting and having that conversation was great. And then the supervisor checking on her afterwards, I think also was fantastic to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And having that supervisor support is so important when there's a conflict. So that's really good. That's a great story.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be managers that don't necessarily understand why are we counting this? And, you know, I hear a lot of, I've heard, you know, some companies that put in place, like, we're going to have 50% female leaders or something like that, you know, something that is a quota sounding like thing. And that, boy, you know, I mean, there's nothing that raises the fur on people's back more than talking about quotas. So, you know, that's definitely something that unfortunately can create a backlash that's you know, really undeserved and unfair, but can then be very negative for the women that do end up in leadership positions in that particular company. So I'm glad, I mean, we don't practice it that way, but we do require that, let's say, you know, when there are people being considered for a role, you know, that you include underrepresented candidates in the assessment. And I think that's a great way to approach it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. And I have one last question for you, Christina. Is there anything else you would like to share with us?
When I think on my career, you know, it's a lot about just staying curious and reading and, you know, listening to podcasts on subjects that you find interesting or that inspire you. Also, you know, the offshore experience is teaching you lessons that few people in the world have experienced. So don't forget, like, how valuable you ladies offshore are after your experience. I think it's a great background for many different roles. The other sort of reflection on how I tackle my position now and what's important is, you know, have a good management of your calendar, your time, your space, you know, to enable you to combine multiple roles in life, that you can, you know, be an executive and a mom and a wife and a friend. You know, these things are possible, but it takes good planning, and it takes that we set limits and that we take care of our health. So, you know, remembering to get good sleep, eat healthy, stay physically active. And then my last quote, or my favorite quote, is by Maya Angelou, and that is, do the best you can until you know better. And when you know better, do better. That's my philosophy.
I love it. Thank you so much, Christina, for coming on the Women Offshore podcast.
You're welcome. It was great to talk with you.
Before you go, here are some events on deck from my colleague Savannah at the Oil and Gas Global Network.
Hey everybody, it's Savannah from OGGN, and here are the events on deck for July 2021. This month we have 5 events, but if you'd like the full list, you can click the link in the show notes to sign up for our events newsletter. We send it out every month, and it includes more info about the events I talk about here. We even include events that occur 2 months ahead of time, so if you're always interested in staying in the loop about oil and gas events, make sure to check that out. This month, OGGN will be hosting our monthly happy hour at the Cannon in Houston, Texas on July 29th. Our June happy hour was a hit, so if you weren't there for the June one, we hope to see you there this month at our July happy hour. At this event, you'll be able to meet some of OGGN's hosts and network with other oil and gas industry professionals, all while enjoying great food and drinks. Don't forget that it's on July 29th. Other than OGGN's events, we have 2 in-person and 2 online events. First up, we have our 2 in-person events. The first one being the Doug Permian and Eagle Ford Conference at the Fort Worth Convention Center from July 12th to July 14th. And the next in-person event is the SPE International Data Science Convention at the Norris Convention Center in Houston, Texas on July 8th. Next, we have our two online events, the first being a Cognite webinar titled From Buzzwords to Boardrooms, What Energy Leaders Really Think About the Transition Towards True Sustainability. And that's on July 8th from 11:30 to 12:30. And lastly, we have the US-Africa Energy Forum, which is online on July 12th. If you have any questions about these events or any of our shows, make sure to reach out to me through my email in the show notes. That's all for July. I hope you guys have a great month, and thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the Women Offshore Podcast. What did you think of the show? Leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Additionally, if you want to propel Women Offshore forward, please visit womenoffshore.org or womenoffshore.shop, make a donation, or purchase some swag. Until next time, stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.